The Talmud teaches that the ancient patriarchs were all prophets, and that each one of them left testaments for their descendants to read. These contain commands for their children, moral lessons, and prophecy. This legend is not only repeated among the Essene community, but fragments of 20 such records have been found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Stay tuned for my conversation with noted scholar Dr. Ken Johnson next in this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. Folks, thanks for tuning in today to Soaring Eagle Radio. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, all of those type of podcasting platforms. We are on Global Star Radio Network Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are on Talk America Radio, that's talkamerica.us, Sundays at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're on the Prepper Broadcasting Network. That's Mondays at 2 and 11. You can consult their schedule, Prepper Broadcasting Network. We are on Brandon House's Worldview Weekend Radio. That's on demand, worldviewweekend.com/radio. My guest today is Dr. Ken Johnson, who's an author and lecturer who speaks about a variety of issues related to Bible prophecy, ancient history, and apostasy that will form in the Church of the Last Days. He received a doctorate in theology from the Christian College of Texas in Texarkana, Texas, in 1989. And he is the author of too many books to go through right now, but some of those will probably be mentioned during our conversation. Ken, welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And let me just say for our listeners' sake that Ken's website, BibleFacts.org, BibleFacts.org, you can get a listing of his books and see some of the things he's doing. I know you have a YouTube channel, and I'm pretty sure you post your Tuesday night Bible studies out there too on your YouTube channel, don't you?
Yeah, we have a Tuesday night Bible study, a Thursday night live stream, and you can get to all of those from the website itself.
Perfect, perfect. So there you go, folks. The Tuesday night Bible study is on demand. The Thursday is live stream, so they can join in and just watch that and be encouraged. Ken, I'm holding in my hands, correct me if I misspeak on this, but Ancient Testaments of the Patriarchs, Autobiographies from the Dead Sea Scrolls. Is this your latest book?
Actually, no. There's one out since then. It's called Law of Kings. But the Testaments of the Patriarchs is probably going to be one of the more important books as far as the Jews coming to the Lord and the Messianic movement and those kind of things. So I'm really excited that the Lord allowed me to find those and get those translated and put together for everyone.
Yes. Well, I've had this book for about a week now, and able to go through it. And folks, what you're going to find in this book is the testaments of Enoch, Lamech, Noah, Abraham, Jacob, Levi, Judah, Naphtali, Joseph, I could go on and on and on. You're going to find testaments of all of these patriarchs. So maybe we should start here, Ken. When we're talking about patriarchs, let's do this first. Let's describe or define. What do you mean by patriarchs? Who decides who patriarchs are? Because as soon as I say that, I know some people are going to say, "Well, I didn't know that Enos was a patriarch. I didn't know Lamech was a patriarch. I didn't know that Levi was a." So, how do we arrive at a definition for who is a patriarch?
Well, there's a legend in the Talmud, where I originally learned from it, is that the patriarchs were the king, priest, prophet, rulers of the planet. It starts with Adam and then goes all the way through the time of Moses, when Moses receives the law on Mount Sinai and does something different, basically. And the legend says that Adam, through Noah, Shem, down through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Levi, Kohath, Amram, and then Aaron are the patriarchs. And Aaron begins the priestly order of the Mosaic Law. And the legend is that each one of these people were, anytime God speaks to you directly, and then you relate that, write it down or whatever, that makes you a prophet by definition, which is what the Jews say. So that's the legend. And then I found out that it's also mentioned by the church fathers as being real. I should mention also, though, that the church fathers and the Talmud, which would be the Pharisaical branch, all say that the Old Testament is a closed canon. So we're not supposed to add to the canon. So that's totally separate. But before the time of Moses, starting, you know, writing with Genesis and going up, we have these patriarchs. But what's interesting is when you look at the Talmud, they'll say the legend is true, but we have no idea what these things or who taught what, because they don't exist anymore. And it's funny, if your grandfather or my grandfather wrote prophecy, I would have copies of that, you know. So if they don't, that simply means that they don't like what's written in there, which is interesting. So you get the Dead Sea Scrolls and they give you the same legend, but they actually have fragments. Everything in the Dead Sea Scroll is fragments, but they all have fragments of these testaments. And what's interesting, very interesting to us, is that the Pharisees will interpret the Old Testament by the oral Torah. So they'll say Messiah didn't come, there's not supposed to be a virgin birth, you know, etc. The Essenes say that's not true, because we interpret the Old Testament by the writings of the patriarchs. And the writings of the patriarchs, when you look at their theology and their prophecy, is identical to Christian theology. And this is amazing, because Paul talks in Romans 11 about a time when eventually all Israel will be saved. And so we're seeing, with the Messianic movement, the Dead Sea Scrolls coming out, Jews are going to have to really stop and think about this. Forget about us wacky Christians. We didn't invent anything. We didn't twist anything. We inherited our theology from the Essenes. So we're out of the picture now. Do you want to follow Essenes or Pharisees? They've got to stop and look at this.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Now, you mentioned something. I want to make sure that our listeners, I'm sure that many of them picked up on this, Ken, but I want to make sure that those who did not, we don't just bypass this. You mentioned the Talmud. You mentioned the way that the Pharisees or Pharisaical doctrine or theology was derived. You mentioned the oral Torah. So that's what the Talmud is, right? The oral
right.
Torah and the commentary on that. That's the Talmud, correct?
Right.
Okay. Now, and you mentioned the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, the Dead Sea Scrolls, that is the manuscripts of the Essene community, correct?
Right.
Okay.
And that's what's fascinating about it, because we have, you know, you get to the end of the Old Testament and there's just Jews. You get to the beginning of the New Testament and there are Sadducees and Pharisees and Essenes and Zealots and Sakari and all these different factions. And you're wondering what happened. Well, the history of that 400 silent years is all recorded in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And they tell the story that Jews actually followed the writings of the patriarchs until there was this basically a civil war between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. And it got to the place where they fell into their prophesied apostasy, and it was all planned out. The scrolls are amazing. They actually tell you that the Messiah is actually supposed to be God incarnate, different from the Father, and there's also this Holy Spirit, which somehow is God. So we're seeing the old ones in many of these scrolls are Trinitarian. So it's the same as our normal Christian theology. And the Messiah was supposed to come twice, once to die to pay for our sin nature, and once to establish a messianic kingdom. And they have the ages all plotted out and this kind of stuff. So it's amazing to see this. And they were ready for the Messiah to come. There's a lot of stuff in the scrolls themselves that are pretty amazing. It's interesting because when you get down to, we all know Moses, the lawgiver, and then Aaron, his brother, which was the first of the priests, the Aaronic priests. He has a testament, and it's in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And it literally talks about the time that most of these do, that when the Messiah comes, he will be rejected by the Levitical priesthood. And Aaron himself says, if you want to have God's favor, have nothing to do with the nails. You know, and he doesn't explain what that is. Of course, we understand, have nothing to do with the crucifixion, you know, and understand that that happens. There's a fascinating point of reference in Matthew, where Matthew says that when Jesus died on the cross, the veil of the temple was ripped in half. And what's really fascinating is that's recorded, so that's history, but we weren't told by Matthew that it was a prophecy. The Essenes said that when the Levites reject Messiah, that the Messiah or God would reject Levitical priesthood. He's going to replace them by a different Gentile priesthood. But the sign that God rejects the priesthood is that the veil of the temple would be ripped in half mysteriously. So it's fascinating to see these things and how they point to Christian theology.
Absolutely. And this, what you've just said in the last couple of minutes alone, Ken, really bears to your earlier point that there's a reason why the Pharisees only appealed to the Talmud and the oral Torah, because they quite frankly didn't want to acknowledge any of these things, did they?
Right, and that was actually part of the prophecies. And I should say something about that, because some of us believe the prophecies stopped. And most of us Calvary Chapel people would say, no, all the gifts still continue. But it was interesting that in Jesus' day, the Pharisees thought that the gifts stopped. And the Essenes said, no, we have prophets. We have words of wisdom from the Lord. And even when the Christian days began, we have Agabus the prophet. So there are believers, at least in the first century, that continue the gifts, prophecy and the like. So again, we're not trying to add to scriptures. But the Essenes were noted by people like Josephus as being extremely accurate with their prophecies and extremely godly. And one particular scroll is amazing to me, because they're all saying the Messiah would come and die for our sins to establish so we can have a relationship with God and fix our sin problem. But this one manuscript actually says that the event where the Messiah would fix this problem by dying for us in some way, the event itself would take place one Shemitah after the end of the ninth Jubilee of their age. Well, when you go back and you look at the calendars and you figure out when that is on their age, it actually comes out to be 32 AD. And that was really amazing to me. So not getting you can get the same date from Daniel chapter 9. But again, these guys are kind of independent, looking at the patriarchs, following the gift of prophecy. And they say that when the Sadducees and the Pharisees became corrupt, that the Holy Spirit led them to go out into the wilderness so they could create a place for keeping of the scrolls. And they were to fulfill the prophecy written by Isaiah the prophet about a voice crying in the wilderness to prepare the way of the Messiah. And it's interesting that John the Baptist said the same thing. And where John the Baptist used to baptize in the Jordan River is only about 8 miles from Qumran.
That's an interesting fact right there. Yes. So these testaments then, again, folks, the book that we're talking about is is Ken's book, Ancient Testaments of the Patriarchs, Autobiographies from the Dead Sea Scrolls. So these testaments, you say, I don't know if I read it, Ken, or if I heard you talking about this. When we're talking about testaments, folks, this is the law as the patriarchs would have handed it down to their sons or to their families. The rules that they wanted their progeny to live by. Is that an accurate statement, Ken?
Yeah, we kind of have the same thing. If I die, I usually have a last will and testament, and it says that my kids get whatever I want them to have, and maybe I'll specify only if they have a job and or they're married or they're whatever. And so it's the same kind of a concept. These testaments are usually written at the end of their lives, and they're saying, look, I messed up with this and I messed up with that, and make sure to stay away from alcohol, make sure to stay away from this. This is the way you should live your life, and remember to look for Messiah. And there's a lot of prophecy, but there's a lot of really good moral stories in there too. And most people have thought for years that it's all fiction, but if the church fathers said they were real, and then the Pharisees, which is, and then Jews today all have that same concept, and then we find them in the Dead Sea Scrolls. That's what's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. So, as an example, Adam gave laws to his children, but clearly Cain didn't obey them, did he?
Right.
Yeah. So, how does all that come into play then, I guess, is the question. What did the patriarchs actually teach their children? What did they write? And where are those documents?
Well, the majority of them we still don't have, but there's fragments. We have fragments of Enos, which would be Adam's grandson. We have fragments of Lamech, Noah, and then supposedly Shem all the way down to Abraham. You know, they each had testaments. We have fragments of the testament of Abraham and Jacob, and then Jacob's 12 kids. And then from Levi, we have Kohath, and then Amram, and then Aaron. And so they basically all teach that we have this sin nature, and the Messiah is going to come and fix it. There's an interesting point in Levi's testament. He was actually being trained for the priesthood to do the sacrifices. And he's saying that he sits down one time, and he's in the process of doing this, and he realizes just all of a sudden he's a sinner, and there's nothing he can do about it. And as a matter of fact, everybody's a sinner, and there's nothing we can do about it except trust in the Messiah. And he prays that the Lord would save him, and he has this conversion experience. And so it's amazing to see all the way through, just like the prophet Habakkuk in the Old Testament says, the just live by faith. And Paul quotes that in Galatians, Hebrews, and Romans. And so we can see that the law was here for a time to point us to Christ, but we have always accepted the Messiah for salvation. There never was a time when the sacrifices saved us. It's always been through faith. And it's interesting to see that in the lives of the patriarchs.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah. So the Essenes, the authors of Dead Sea Scrolls, they believed that they had the original writings of the patriarchs.
Right.
That's an amazing thing.
Would say, no, you don't. And that's where the big argument comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just an amazing thought to consider that they believed that they had in their possession the original testaments of the patriarchs.
And what's amazing to me is when you look at this, the Pharisees reject them because they follow the oral Torah. The Essenes reject the oral Torah because they follow the patriarchs. And people could say, well, how do you know the patriarch or the Essenes rather didn't just make up these writings? Well, that's always a possibility. So as a Christian, I would compare all this stuff to the New Testament. And the Talmud falls very short of the New Testament concepts. But when you look at the Essene theology through the patriarchs, again, they're Trinitarian. They believe in The Messiah has to come and die for our sins. There's one Messiah who's God incarnate. He comes twice. And the ages are mapped out. Talk about date setters. They set all those dates. They were looking for the end of their age to come. And if you think about it, people have always said, whatever happened to the Essenes, they just disappeared. Well, if you believe that the Messiah was going to come and die for your sins in 32 AD, the sign of which is that the temple veil would be ripped in half. He would start a new priesthood with new teachings. And you waited for this and you got to that point and you heard about Yeshua healing people. Then you hear he got crucified. And then anybody going to Jerusalem sees the temple veil was ripped. And his disciples are in the temple preaching and nobody's arresting them. What would you do? You'd run to the temple and listen, and then you'd be the first one to say, how do I become a follower of Messiah? You know, and so naturally the Essenes disappeared because they're us.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Well, Josephus wrote about Adam. Adam wrote that there'd be two earth-destroying events.
Mm-hmm.
That's a remarkable thing. Think about this, folks. Adam wrote that there would be two earth-destroying events. Where would he get that information?
Adam would have been a prophet, like the others, all the patriarchs would be. Obviously, because he was in the Garden of Eden and God talked to him every night. So that's really amazing when you think of that.
It is. Yeah, it's just absolutely mind-blowing when you think about it. In fact, he was pretty specific in his writings according to the Essenes too. He named fire and flood according to Josephus.
Right.
And of course, he didn't know which one was going to be first.
Yeah, and then it says that actually either in Josephus or in the book of Jasher, it says that Canaan knew by his wisdom that the flood would come first. And so it's interesting how each one of these people had, you know, revelations, and Canaan led a minor revival. Enoch led a major revival, but it, you know, still had problems. Just amazing to see all of those things come out.
Well, it is, and it really makes me pause and think, Ken, because now some people may say, well, how did Josephus know that? Well, I mean, there had to be a source, right?
Right.
There had to be a source that he was relying on. People say, well, I mean, how can you trust that? And I immediately think, again, of the Apostle Paul, that there are several instances that Paul says things, and they're really head-scratchers, but when you understand, he assumes that these things are known, that
right.
It doesn't really require an explanation.
Right, and that makes perfect sense if you think about it. You and I think you and I are both Calvary Chapel people, but we both know that there are Baptists and that there are Catholics and that there are Episcopalians and stuff like that. Now, we may totally agree with their doctrine, or we might think they're the worst Christians ever or somewhere in between. But no matter what we think about them, we know they exist. So the Pharisees knew about the Essenes. The Essenes knew about the Pharisees. They said these guys are horrible. You know, they're horrible apostates. And so both sides kind of sort of hated each other, but they all knew. And what's amazing is to go through what I'm doing now in my research is going through all the Dead Sea Scrolls and finding those idioms and comparing them to Paul's writings, because Paul was prophesied in the Dead Sea Scrolls and he made so many comments like you're saying where we're not sure what he meant, but you can tell by the phrase it's a household idiom that everybody else knows what it means.
Yes. Yeah. Which to me is very exciting. Very exciting, because that means that there was a bank of common knowledge in those days that somehow the Lord is going to reveal again. And I think that's what he's doing through your research, through examining the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's just an amazing thing. Now, something else before we move on, Ken, I wanted to bring up that you mentioned that Josephus wrote that, and this, I'm going to paraphrase the quote, something about it would be very, very tedious to write down all of the sons and daughters of Adam and Eve, that there were, the list would just, it would just be a very lengthy, somewhat boring exercise. Well, that raises the question, doesn't it? Did he have a list?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he said, so we're going to concentrate just on the main ones. And he went from Adam all the way down to Noah. And so he was talking about that king list. But yeah, that's when I first read that, I thought the same thing. Wait a minute, you have a list? Because it's not tedious to me. There's only 10 people.
Yeah, that's
you know, right. But if we have everybody's sons and daughters listed somewhere, where's this list at?
Yes.
You know, there's lots of examples like that if you actually stop and look careful at what they're saying.
Yes. Yeah, there are a number of things that they assume, but we're wondering, okay, where's the rest of the information?
And I would say it's good to be skeptical because there are, I mean, for every real scroll that we find, there's probably 10 or 20 fake scrolls that cults have written throughout the centuries. The Gnostics in the first century put together a bunch of fake stuff. The church fathers, for instance, say there's always been only four gospels and everything else is a piece of fiction. And so when you find the gospel of Nicodemus, Gospel of Thomas, Gospel of Mary, those kind of things, you know, they're fiction. Of course, if you go ahead and read them, you can tell that it's Gnostic, because the whole concept is you save yourself through Gnostic meditation and all sorts of other weird things that go against scripture. So it all comes back to just comparing everything to the New Testament.
Yeah, that's right. And the Dead Sea Scrolls line up with what we identify as Christian theology.
Mm-hmm.
Ken, was it Nicholas of Damascus that wrote a world history that spoke of Moses leading the Exodus? Was that Nicholas or?
Yeah, there was a Nicholas of Damascus, Bosiris, I think, of Chaldea, and there were several of them. Nicholas of Damascus, I believe, wrote like a 100 volumes. He gets to Moses in volume 69, if I remember correctly. I mean, there's like a ton of this stuff all over. Mm. There's a historical record of the early Britons that goes all the way back to the flood, or all the way back to Adam, rather. Mm. It's 100 volumes written in a very, very ancient, archaic form of English, you know, and it's still available. I don't know if anybody could read it, but these things are all over. And every culture has a legend of a flood, and everything is slightly different, but the basic story is the same. It's really amazing.
And that would be very interesting reading, folks, because what Ken said was this Nicholas of Damascus wrote a world history, and it took him to the 69th volume to get to Moses leading the Israelites out of Egypt. So I'd love to read the previous 68 books.
Yeah. For Nicholas, I think we have lots of quotes from the church fathers and other people, but the original works were lost. And that's what's going to happen to a lot of this stuff, too. Talking about Paul and like what I was saying, I was doing trying to compare everything together in the Testament of Benjamin. He actually says that when the Messiah comes and there's an age. There's a messianic age that they call the age of grace, and it's the age right after the law. They have a law, an age of chaos, which is 2,000 years, an age of Torah, which is 2,000 years, and an age of grace, which is 2,000 years, and then a messianic kingdom, which lasts 1,000 years. And so they have this all mapped out, and they said that when the age of grace comes, that's when the Messiah comes, dies for our sins, and creates this new system, rejects the Pharisaical line. And it says that there will be a man of the tribe of Benjamin that will explain everything and write down epistles or little letters. And his letters will be in the synagogue of the Gentiles for all time. And it's an amazing prophecy. And so when you look at that, basically, we're being told by the Dead Sea Scrolls, the answers to all of your questions are in the epistles of Paul. And so I grab all my scrolls and I run back to the epistles of Paul. And now I'm going through them, you know, piece by piece, looking at all those little phrases and trying to pull back things. There's some pretty amazing things in there.
Yeah.
And as you would figure, it doesn't really change much of anything, you know, coming from like a Calvary Chapel standpoint, where we just, you spend years going over the scriptures over and over and over and over. Pretty soon you pretty much understand it very well. And so these let you know for sure that you're interpreting it right, but no major, you know, changes or anything. But it's just really amazing to see that kind of stuff.
Well, should we or shouldn't we touch on Enoch? That's the one it seems like everybody gravitates toward. Ken, you've probably heard that. You go to a lot of different prophecy conferences, and mm-hmm. and I know you engage a lot of people in conversation. Enoch has a number. I mean, it's, I'm looking at page 8 and 9 of your book. Again, folks, Ancient Testimonies of the Patriarchs, Autobiographies from the Dead Sea Scrolls. You need to pick up a copy of this. BibleFacts.org. Look for books, and I believe that'll take you to Amazon. A number of biblical doctrines that are found in Enoch, doctrines about the Messiah, doctrines about his first advent, doctrines about end time prophecies. I mean, Enoch is just rich in what we could call New Testament doctrine and theology, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's amazing. To that, I would say first, when I was studying the church fathers, they said that first Enoch, which is the one that you get from the Ethiopian Coptic Church, is basically the original Enoch. In other words, there's also Second Enoch, Secret of Enoch, a whole bunch of others that they said were written by cults of their day. So they only pay attention to that one book of Enoch. Then when the Dead Sea Scrolls came, we have fragments of Enoch in the Dead Sea Scrolls, not very much, but enough to know that it's there, several chapters, and it matches the Ethiopian Chronicle perfectly. So, you know, they've kept it well. And yeah, the theology is basically the same. There's going to be a Messiah to come sometime that is going to fix everything. He's going to be born of a virgin. There's just a lot of things like that. The Messiah is called Messiah. He's also called the Son of Man, a whole bunch of things like that. And that's like when we go back and we look through the Old Testament, he's also called the Word. So the word of the Lord would come to one of the prophets. Well, that's a Christophany, you know, coming and talking to one of the prophets. And a lot of times he would be called the Son of Man or those type of phrases. So again, we see all those crossover ties to that. I would say, though, that we don't have the whole book of Enoch from the Dead Sea Scrolls. And there was a couple of chapters, a couple of places in the book of Enoch, I feel that there were insertions. And so in my version, I've got Christian commentary, and I tell you what I think is the insertions and what's legitimate. But there's a lot of history, pre-flood history, and several prophecies that I think are important for our time period in there, too. But think about this. If Enoch is actually 107 chapters, and if that's common for a testament, and we have like 3 or 4 or 5 chapters per, you know, person, think of what we're still missing. And the information that might be found any day now when they dig up a new scroll in Qumran. It's just an exciting time to live.
Well, let's jump to Noah's Testament.
Mm-hmm.
In the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's one scroll. It's named the, if I can pronounce this correctly, the Genesis Apocryphon.
Right.
Genesis Apocryphon, but you think that that's really misnamed.
Yeah, several people do now. The when they first looked at it, they saw, oh, this is about Abraham and Isaac. It's kind of a little Genesis or a commentary or something like that. And so Apocryphon just means something like that. So it's a Genesis Apocryphon. They set it aside. But then when you find the legend of the patriarchs, and you find, you know, like Enos and Noah and that stuff, and you see this, and it's the Genesis Apocryphon is part of the Testament of Lamech, Noah, and part of Abraham. And it's really interesting because they would have like big sections of, like each scroll would have like 5 columns, And each scroll is labeled, like Aleph, Bet, Gimel, on down. Well, our scroll starts with Kaf. So that's like the letter K, so it's like halfway through the alphabet. So if you think about what we have, there's probably a good 40 or 50 pages that we're missing at the beginning of the Genesis Apocryphon. So there's actually quite a bit of information to it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find it. One of the... three daughters from his brother's families as wives for his sons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking Shem, Ham, and Japheth. But what was interesting was he wrote, according to the marriage custom that the Lord of Eternity gave to Adam, end quote. Wow.
Right.
So there was a known law custom concerning marriage that Noah was following that was passed down from God to Adam and then down through succeeding generations.
Right. Yeah, we have in some of the scrolls, like the Law of Kings, it talks about a lot of the Gentiles didn't have divorce papers or marriage licenses. They just had certain customs. And that was a degradation from the way it was supposed to be. We're always supposed to get married and have one man for one woman for life. And of course, the exception is when she dies, you can remarry. And different nations had different customs and different things tacked onto that. But to see that that has always been, it's just really cool to see that the basic moral law, Noahide law, and these kind of things have always been, and the prophecies have always been, you know, like in the Testament of Noah, they all know that obviously through Noah and one of his kids, now the Messiah is going to come. And it wasn't until he had a certain dream that he realized it would be Shem. And so Shem was given the secrets and made the next priest. And it goes down like that. And we know from history, it goes down through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and through David. And then eventually the Messiah comes 2000 years ago. But it's amazing just to see, because we know all the history, where it's going. But you can actually see how all these things line up.
Yes, yeah. Now, Noah also, as you would expect, had a lot to say about the flood, about the new earth, even worship of God. He had several very interesting visions. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, one of the things that everybody's puzzled about is in Genesis, it says that Noah went to sleep. Noah woke up, realized what Ham had done, so he cursed Canaan, which is the grandson of Ham. And everybody's wondering, well, what did Ham do? Why did he curse Canaan instead of Ham? What did he know instantly when he woke up? And there's lots of theories about what these may have been. And it's interesting just to look at Noah's Testament and see what he said. He went to sleep. What it was the festival. It was a festival time. And they had done the rituals, and then they had went to sleep. And he had a prophetic dream. And in the dream, he was told about how, just real basically or real briefly, what would happen, an apostasy would form at the end of that particular age, and that the only son he could trust was Shem. And that there were certain people that would invade the land from certain directions and this kind of stuff. So he wakes up, and we're not told the rest of the story, but he comes to find out that half the dream has already come to pass. So if that's the case, the rest of it is too. So he knows about the coming apostasy. He takes Shem aside, makes him the next priest, and then goes forward. And so all those things make a lot of sense, because in the visions, there is a vine, and the vine is always the nation of Israel. Later on, a descendant of Shem would create this vine or this country. And then he and his Gentile, you know, lineage basically is always a cedar tree. And it's amazing to me to look at these old scrolls and see all of those, not just the idioms, but the symbols too. So now it makes perfect sense when we go to the New Testament and Jesus curses the fig tree and talks about the vine, and it refers to Israel or the Jews, and there's a cedar of Lebanon, you know, reference, and so you kind of know what we're talking about.
Judah's testament is very interesting as well, because it almost reads like, wow, this is right out of the pages of the church today, because he warns against false prophets arising and persecuting the righteous. And I thought, well, we are well down that road today, and it's just going to get worse. He also talks about a Messiah rising up from Judah's line that's going to bring salvation. That's a common theme through a lot of these testimonies.
Yeah, it is. And that's what's interesting about it, because the additional law that Moses brought, all the priests starting from Jacob have to come through the line of Levi. But when Messiah comes, he starts a new priesthood, which is a Melchizedekian priesthood, which comes from the lineage of Judah. And that's what's amazing too. In Hebrews, Paul tries to explain the references to the Melchizedekian priesthood and how Christ is different. And he says, I've got a lot I could tell you about this guy, but you're dull of hearing, which means you refuse to listen because you're Pharisees and you won't listen to anything that's a seen. But he explains all that. Judah, I think, is really amazing, because he basically, you know, he has three sons, and then he puts Tamar with one son, and the one son dies. Tamar goes to the next son, and that son dies, and so he has all these problems. Well, in the Testament, though, he gives you the story about how when he was younger, one of the Canaanite kings befriended him. He had a beautiful daughter and lots of money and a good army. And he was thinking, well, if I'm going to rule over here, being in league with this country or this little Canaanite kingdom would be really helpful. And so, you know, what's not to like? Beautiful woman, lots of money, the king's army at your disposal, you know, and you're the new prince, so to speak. So he thinks that's great. So he marries her. Now, later on, though, he talks about how he picked Tamar for his firstborn son, and his wife didn't like her because she's not Canaanite. They didn't do it the Canaanite way. And so his wife basically told the son, do not get her pregnant. Do not do that. She's, we'll get someone else for you. And of course, they listen to their mother, disobey the law, and God strikes them dead. So at the end of this thing, Judah's basically saying, marrying the cute princess was the worst mistake of my life. It cost me my children. They're dead because of her, because she's an unbeliever. Whatever you do, and he makes this very clear at the end of the Testament, whatever you do, do not marry a pretty face. Do not marry for money. Godliness is the only thing. Mm. Believe me, you will pay for it. And I don't want you to have to go through this. So, some amazing moral lessons in these Testaments.
Yeah. Okay, the Jubilee prophecy, I think, is very interesting, given in Levi. And I'm going to say this is columns 16 and 17. Is that the way that you would say it, Ken?
Yeah, I believe so.
So the Jubilee prophecy, what is that?
Basically, it's pretty interesting. The Essenes are explaining how they were given prophecies, and maybe they're from the rest of the patriarchs. We're not sure. But the Essene theology is that the Maccabees come along and free Judah from Syrian tyranny, and they're godly. They're wonderful rulers, you know, for the first couple of generations. But then they apostatize, basically. The law has always taught, like the law of Moses, has always taught that there is Noahide law, which all the Gentiles have to follow. They're looking for Messiah. If you're godly, you follow the seven Noahide laws, then you can be saved when Messiah comes. The Jews have these extra laws, extra ceremonies, temples, sacrifices, and this stuff. And so that's always been kept. But they came along to a certain point, and the rulers said, we need to have all the Gentiles in the land be circumcised and follow the Mosaic law. Well, that's forbidden. It's actually forbidden in the Old Testament. And so that started a problem, and one thing led to another. And there were the people that said, just do what the government tells you to do. Those were Sadducees. And then there were the separatists or the Pharisees that said, no, it is against the law. You cannot do that. And it actually started a civil war. This civil war happened in 80 BC. And it's actually well documented in historical circles. But the Essenes pulled back because shortly thereafter, the Pharisees developed what they called oral Torah to explain everything, started saying everybody has to go to state-run yeshivas or schools to be properly indoctrinated. And the Essenes pulled back from it. But it got so messed up that the scrolls say that by the 10th Jubilee, all of Israel would be walking in madness. And that's exactly what happened. Everybody was trying to kill the other faction. Imagine Catholics and Baptists and Calvary Chapelites and, you know, other people. We're all so know that everybody is so apostatized. We're actually trying to kill each other. And that's how bad it got. And they could not rule themselves anymore. So they asked Rome to step in, and kind of the rest is history. But in this prophecy, he gives you the 10 Jubilees and what would happen in each one of these. About the civil war and the corrupt priests arising in the seventh week of the seventh jubilee and this kind of stuff. And when you look at these things, when they start and when they end at the end of the age, they follow along perfectly with what's happened.
Now, you mentioned, and I want to make folks aware of this. We mentioned it briefly early on in our conversation in the ancient law of kings. I just want to direct people's attention, along with this Ancient Testament of the Patriarchs, I would encourage you to pick up a copy of this Ancient Law of Kings. And of course, again, you can go to Ken's website, BibleFacts.org, BibleFacts.org, go to the store tab, and there you'll see all of the books that Ken has wrote. But this one, Ancient Law of Kings, according to 1 Samuel 10:25, Prophet Samuel wrote down the parts belonging only to the king of Israel, explaining them thoroughly. He then placed the scroll in the tabernacle. This was preserved and handed down through the centuries. This text, known as the Law of the Kings, explained the king's role in the government of ancient Israel. It also explained in great detail the court system Israel had, one for the Jews and one for the Gentiles. Gentile law also called Noahide law is explained as originating with Adam in the pre-flood world and being revived by Noah after the flood. Noahide law is found in many ancient manuscripts, including the Talmud and the Dead Sea Scrolls. So, let's talk about that briefly in the amount of time that we have left. And let's talk about the Noahide law. First of all, for those who are not familiar with it, what is it, and what's the relevance to us today?
Well, none of the stuff exists as a court system or a law for us today. We're Christians, and we follow Christ's law, for instance. But the misunderstanding, we've got messianics today, messianic churches or synagogues. They all teach the concept of Noahide law, but we have break-offs or cults, if you will, Hebrew roots groups that don't understand this and they get everything confused. So they're the people saying you got to be circumcised, you can't eat pork, you got to do this, you got to do that, because that's the law that's always been. And they don't understand history. They're making the same mistake that the Pharisees and the Sadducees did in the last age, which is very clearly detailed in the Dead Sea Scrolls. But what happened is, and they probably did this for everything. There's priestly codes that the priests need to keep a copy of. The king and the Sanhedrin need to keep a copy of the things that they do to make sure they do them right. And so that's what the reference in Samuel is saying, is that Samuel wrote this down because they wanted a king. So here's the laws, his duties, his rights, how you impeach him, so to speak, what he can and cannot do. And in the process of looking at that, that's all gone now because Israel has a totally different government system. But it shows us that there was Noahide law. And the concept is, starting with Noah, and you see this in partially in Genesis chapter 9, he says, you guys spread out, create your own countries. You have to follow the basic laws. You got to believe in one God, not have idolatry, not commit blasphemy, which is believe what Noah taught and await the Messiah. And don't steal, don't kill, you know, don't fornicate, stuff like that. But add, you know, have a just court system, an and add whatever laws you need to for your land. And that's Gentile law. And if you do that and await Messiah, you're saved, just like everybody. If you await Messiah, believe on him, accept him as your savior, you're saved. And so later on, Moses brings through God, through the angels, as Paul calls it angelic law, the entire law of Moses, which Israel is supposed to do. Now, in Israel, they had Jewish court systems for Jews and Gentile court systems for Gentiles. A perfect example of this is Deuteronomy 14:21. It says, you, talking to the Jews, can't eat anything that dies of itself because you're a holy people. But you can give it to the stranger in the gate, and he can give it, and he can go ahead and eat it and give it to people. The stranger is gar, it's a garth leshev, or a garzetic. Anyone that sits in the gate of a city is a judge. So we're talking about if you have even like a cow, but it didn't get slaughtered properly. Now it's unkosher, we can't eat it. You can give it to the Gentiles because they could eat it. So you see different court systems, and there's lots of examples of this throughout the Old Testament. But our Hebrew roots brothers get confused, and they don't understand that, and they're causing major divisions and even cults to spring up. So it's relevant for us to know about the Law of Kings, so we won't make the same mistakes. You're more than welcome to worship on Saturday instead of Sunday. If you want to eat kosher or eat something else, especially if it's good for your, you know, if you have allergies or whatever. But to say that it has anything to do with holiness is forbidden. It's the same mistake of the Sadducees and the Pharisees, which is clearly documented. So it's a fascinating study, just to make sure that we're in the right era.
Yeah. Fantastic summary. Thank you for that. Ken, folks, BibleFacts.org is the website. Ken, you have a Tuesday night Bible study, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that is local for you there in the fellowship.
Yeah, I'm in the Kansas City area, and our Tuesday night Bible study is on Tuesday nights in Lenexa, Kansas. My church is actually in Olathe, Kansas. So,
okay. So if you're interested, there is, how can they contact you? And if they'd like to join these Bible studies?
Probably go to the website and email me. It's probably the easiest way to do it.
Okay. And then there's a live stream on Thursdays, and that's live streamed on YouTube elsewhere?
Yeah, that's on YouTube, and you can go to the website and go to the links for that or follow me on YouTube. We have been doing different studies from time to time, and most of the time we've been doing a Q&A type session.
Are we going to see you any place out on the conference trail, speaking any place, Ken?
Yeah, this summer, I think it's in June or July, I'm speaking in Emporia. They have a small one down there. And then also next October, we should be having the Prophecy Watchers Conference down in Oklahoma City, which is a fairly large conference. And I'm there almost every time.
Folks, we've been talking with Dr. Ken Johnson, the book, Ancient Testaments of the Patriarchs, Autobiographies from the Dead Sea Scrolls. Get yourself a copy. It is available on Amazon if you go to BibleFacts.org, or you can go to Amazon and do a search for Ken Johnson. It'd be easier to click on the book from BibleFacts.org, because Ken's got a lot of books out. So if you want to save yourself the search, then go to BibleFacts.org. Ken, I really enjoyed our conversation. I appreciate your research, and I thank you for taking the time to chat with me today.
Well, thanks for having me on the program.
God bless you, brother.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.